Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And Ray Woodson is our regular guest, too.
A lot of ifs, but after a disastrous 2017, the Giants were not going to rebuild. They're at least trying to compete, while many teams in the majors are tanking.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. We're also brought to you by Houseboats.com, your home for houseboat rentals on Shasta Lake. On today's podcast, we'll check out the Giants minor league system in AA Richmond. And I had a conversation recently with the play-by-play announcer there, Jay Burnham, also Flying Squirrels outfielder Dylan Davis, and right-handed pitcher Sean Anderson. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. And joining us now is Sean Anderson from the Richmond Flying Squirrels. And Sean, having a really good season. Sean, tell us what's been working for you. What have you been working on? What has improved for you this season?
I don't know. Really, this season, I've just been working on attacking the hitters, kind of learning how to read their swings and go deep into ball games. I've been doing a lot of scouting work a couple days beforehand, which has been really helping, and just getting ready for every fifth day.
The scouting work, what do you have? You got video on some of these double-A hitters? I mean, what kind of scouting reports are you getting?
Well, we play them for a 3-4-game series, so if I'm pitching in the next couple days, I mean, I can see visual and just kind of watch their batting practice, see what they're trying to do with the ball.
You know, in college, you were a closer, so tell us about the transition that you made into being a starter from the University of Florida.
Yeah, for me, one of the hardest things was just kind of learning how to pitch in general. When I was in college, the coach called all the pitches, so I just kind of threw whatever was called. And now going through the lineup 2, 3, 4 times, I got to learn how to pitch, and I can't really throw what they're expecting. So what was difficult for me was learning how to pitch, but I've been picking the brains of some of the coaches here and kind of keeping the same mentality that I had when I was a closer when I start, and that's kind of what's been helping me. I build on my aggression and kind of just go after them.
How much does it help that you develop a relationship with your catcher, Aramis Garcia? I mean, he seems to really study the game as well and know what's going on as far as scouting reports.
Yeah, talk about a student of the game. He's fantastic. He's been working on everything that the pitchers have been working on in spring training, with tunneling the pitches and reading the hitter swings. And I mean, he's been awesome to throw to. He's really intelligent about the game and kind of knows how to attack the hitters. And just talking to him throughout the game has been a huge source for me, just learning how to attack those guys.
Take us through last year, you know, getting traded for Eduardo Nunez. I mean, that's a big name player. And you're sitting there in the Red Sox organization. All of a sudden, you come out west. What was that like for you?
To be honest with you, I have no idea. I had no idea that I was going to get traded or I was even on the trading block. I got a call at around midnight from my head coach, and he's like, "Hey, you just been traded to the San Francisco Giants. I don't really have any information. Someone's going to give you a call." And I was like, "All right." And I told my family, I told my friends, and they were upset, but they were kind of psyched for the opportunity. And I've never been to California, and when Yeshaya told me that I was going to San Jose, California, I was kind of stoked for it because I've always wanted to see the Bay Area.
Well, I'm sure you were aware about, you know, the Giants' success winning the 3 World Series and also being able to develop pitchers. So has there been anything that you've noticed about the Giants organization and the way they treat starting pitchers?
I mean, they really take care of them. I mean, they really care for your development. They want to learn what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are, and they want to build on that. They really work on trying to keep you healthy, and just the communication has been such a huge factor this year. I'm able to talk to my pitching coach with whatever issues I have or whatever questions that I have, and I can talk to pretty much anybody. So what's really been helpful is the communication, that they're really open and they're really approachable to talk to them about those kind of things.
You know, out of high school, you were drafted by the Nationals, but it wasn't a high draft choice, so you decided to go to the University of Florida. How did that work out for you? I mean, they have a great program. Of course, they won the College World Series last year. Just a great program throughout the years.
Right, yeah. I was actually the last pick out of high school, which was kind of cool, but it was kind of just cool to get drafted. But, yeah, I really want to go to the University of Florida. I know their track record for how good they develop pitchers and the coach that Kevin O'Sullivan was. So I was looking forward to that, and I learned a ton over my 3 years.
And what about the ball club in Richmond? Tell us about what you think. You know, I know it can be more of a pitcher's league, the Eastern League, at times. I don't know if you've noticed that at all, but what do you guys need to do to improve and try to move up there?
Well, it's been crazy. I mean, all of our hitters have been backing up our pitchers, and our pitchers have been backing up our hitters lately. When the pitchers are scuffling, the hitters kind of put up a four spot when they need to, and then when the pitchers are doing well, they kind of back up the hitters. So we've kind of been working off each other and kind of backing up each other, which has been great. But I think once we kind of fall on the same line where we're pitching great and they're hitting great, I think we'll be an unstoppable team.
And we know that you have a great fastball. So what else are you working on? Are there any other pitches that you want to try to add to your repertoire?
I've been really working on the changeup this year. Being a reliever out of college, I never really had changeup. It was mainly just fastball, slider. And when I started, I've been developing a changeup, and been talking to my pitching coach, Glenn Dishman, about it. And he's just kind of talking to me about the perfect counts to use it in, and just how to execute it the best way I can. So I've been mixing in my changeup the best I can, but still been attacking with my fastball. So.
How do you throw it? Do you throw a circle change, or how are you throwing the changeup?
Almost like a shifted two-seam. I learned it when I was with the Red Sox organization. One of the coaches showed it to me, and it's worked for me. I'm able to really stay on top of it, and it works off my four-seam. And then if I turn it just a little bit, it'll work off my two-seam, depending on which pitch I threw previous. And it's just been kind of really helpful to get back into counts, and got some swing and misses on it, and I feel pretty confident with it.
All right, well, Sean, hey, thanks a lot for joining us. Congrats on a great start to the season, and keep it going.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
That's Sean Anderson. Coming up, we're going to hear from outfielder Dylan Davis with Richmond right after this. If you're thinking about a fun vacation, how about renting a houseboat on beautiful Shasta Lake? That's right. Just go to houseboats.com, where they offer houseboat vacations on Shasta Lake. They also rent cabins, as well as wakeboard, day cruising, fishing, pontoon, and party boats. Food and beverage service, fueling, brand name clothing, souvenirs, and a grocery store are all available at their modern marinas. Jones Valley Resort and Silverthorne Resort are the premier boating destinations on Shasta Lake, and houseboats.com will set you up there. Houseboats.com has the best service, the best boats, and the best locations. Call 877-468-7326 or go to houseboats.com today. Here's a recent conversation I had with Richmond Flying Squirrels outfielder Dylan Davis.
Welcome back. Joining us now from Richmond, Virginia, outfielder Dylan Davis with the Flying Squirrels. Dylan, thanks so much for joining us. First of all, tell us about how it's been going for the whole team and you in particular as you try to build this season, you know, have a really good year.
Yeah, it's been going good. You know, the team's pretty tight-knit. We get along really well. Got a great group of guys. Coaching staff is awesome. The front office around here and, you know, the people that they have around us are great. Definitely make it a lot of fun. You know, myself, just trying to trust the process and stay within myself and, you know, learn from everybody else and, you know, use, you know, the Jerry Sands and the Caleb Gindles and the people that have been around for a while and, you know, take their advice and, you know, learn from them, watch what they do. And it's a pretty special group of guys. So just it's been a lot of fun.
Tell us about how you've evolved. I mean, a couple of years ago, you had the huge season with San Jose and Augusta, the home runs, the RBIs and everything. And then, you know, last year was more difficult when you moved to the Eastern League. I know you were playing a new position at third base for a little while there and then back to the outfield. So what have you learned from all that to take into this season?
I think just trust myself. You know, last year definitely tried doing a lot, doing too much. Maybe, you know, like you said, trying to play a new position, you know, and learn that, and then getting here late and trying to play catch up. Man, I didn't need to do that. So, you know, I always say, is, you know, as bad of a year it was last year, I definitely learned a lot about myself and, you know, the type of person and player that I am and I want to be. Definitely just trying to stay within myself more. You know, I know my ability. I don't need to force anything. Just trust the process, and then, you know, just keep working hard and, you know that there's going to be storms coming, but I got to face them head on, and I'm going to get through them. And, you know, I'm going to come out better, and then there's going to be another storm coming, and I'm going to face it head on and keep pushing through that one too. So it's just trusting the process and stay within myself.
You know, staying within yourself is part of that, not swinging for the fences. I mean, the home runs are going to come. You have enough power that you hit a line drive, many times it'll carry out of the ballpark. Is that part of it?
100%. Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of times you try and swing too hard, and that's when your swing actually slows down. It took a lot of different thought processes into the off season, you know, working hard and trying to barrel up more balls than swing hard. I think if you barrel up balls with the velocity the pitchers have now, like you said, the ball's going to go. I just got to trust my strength, trust my swing. You know, with how good guys are out here throwing strikes and throwing different pitches and everything, you got to be willing to take your hits, and you got to know that home runs and doubles and extra base hits are going to come with you taking a better swing, barreling up more balls with, you know, the velocity and the type of pitches that they throw.
People are talking so much about the swing path these days, you know, and exit velocity and all that. How much do you pay attention to it, or does that not really factor in if you're already just going well? You don't have to really worry about, you know, your swing path and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of new technology out there talking about, you know, exit velocity, like you said, launch angle. But there's definitely the correct way to do it. I think a lot of times you get too focused on hitting the ball too much in the air, and that creates a more of an uphill detrimental swing to what you're doing. I think if you work on, like I said, just barreling up the ball, knowing, you know, when it comes game time, it's time to compete. It's not time to worry about what your swing is doing. That's in, you know, BP and your early work and, you know, feeling good and, you know, looking at video and seeing yourself, you know, take the right swing. And everybody has their own different little thought process of, you know, their launch angle and where they want their barrel to be. And, you know, it's a feel versus real type thing. You just got to know it works for you. Everybody's a lot different. You know, we got guys that take the Josh Donaldson effect to everything. You know, we got guys that, you know, look at JD Martinez and see what he's doing and, you know, whatever have you. I think you got to look at the best players and see what they do. You know, they barrel up balls consistently and keep it at a launch angle between, you know, 12 and 14 degrees. So knowing that your homer is going to come off that and, you know, take your base hits when you can get them.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody the other day about this. When I was growing up, we were taught hit the top of the ball. You know, there are no bad hops in the sky, all that. So I guess it's changed, you know, people with the launch angle and all that. But what are you looking at when a pitch is coming in? What part of the baseball are you trying to hit?
I'm definitely just trying to square up the ball. You know, I know now, you know, taking the correct angle to the ball is going to help you create a more square contact point. But like I said, there's a correct way to do it and then there's a wrong way to do it. So if you're doing it correctly and trying to focus on, you know, the bottom middle of the ball for myself, that's what I try and focus on, just squaring up the baseball correctly so I create that good line drive swing. Not trying to hit it too high in the air because, you know, like you said, those are easy outs. And again, knowing if you barreled the ball consistently with the right attack angle and the right velocity, the ball is going to go and I don't have to worry about that. So I definitely took a more, like I said, just squaring up baseballs more with the correct approach. So that's been definitely a huge change for me right now, which has been great. Like I said, just focusing on that and not trying to, you know, do too much.
You know, I checked out your Twitter account, @Dylan_Davis10, and there's a lot of Oregon State stuff on there because you played there, and this is a very exciting time of year for the Beavers to be in the College World Series. So how much do you follow it? Are you in touch with Coach Casey there? And I'm sure you have a big rooting interest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not a big social media guy. I haven't, you know, I don't post anything on Instagram or tweet very much. But, yeah, Hank, you know, tweeted or texted Michael and I the other day to, you know, get some support for Nick Madrigal and Trevor Larnach to, you know, help them get the Golden Spikes Award, which is, you know, they're both deservedly so. You know, Pat Casey and I will text randomly here and there. You know, Nate Yeske texted a bunch of us in a group chat, you know, just looking for advice that he can tell the guys. And, you know, it's awesome seeing the, you know, the team doing what they've, you know, they've been doing every year since we left. You know, it's a sense of pride. You know, I haven't graduated, but, you know, I'm definitely an Oregon State baseball alum, so it's fun to – you know, for them to keep the tradition going, you know, the winning environment and, you know, all these great players that come through and, you know, what they're able to do and how they're able to bond. And, you know, Casey does a great job with everybody there. I mean, he's a great coach. All the coaches there are awesome. You know, it's a great environment. You know, when I was there, I felt at home. It was like a second home to me. So it was awesome. I really enjoyed my time there, and I really enjoy, you know, what they're able to do and what they're able to accomplish.
So what would be your advice for Madrigal? He was the number three overall pick in the draft, and you were pretty high. You were a third-round pick. So what's your advice about a kid coming out of college and going through the minor leagues?
I think it's, you know that you have your own journey and you have your own process. I think a lot of the times you see other people and what they're doing, and you try and do that, you know. So you try and force things. I think if you, you know, stay within yourself and what you're doing and, you know, what got you to that point, you know, obviously he's a great player and, you know, he knows what he's capable of. He knows his game. He knows what he wants to do. So he's going to be just fine. I think, you know, for myself, you know, again, trying to do too much at some points and, you know, not staying within myself and, you know, trying to force things that don't need to be forced. I think that's a huge thing for a lot of people coming out. Just know that everybody has their own journey, whatever it may be, and keep working hard and just have fun.
Dylan, thanks a lot for the time. Really appreciate it. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That's Flying Squirrels outfielder Dylan Davis. I also had a chance to talk about the entire Richmond team with their play-by-play announcer, Jay Burnham. Here's the conversation we had recently.
Welcome back to Orange and Black Best of the Farm. And joining us now, the play-by-play voice of the Richmond Flying Squirrels, Jay Burnham. Jay, thanks a lot for joining us. How's it going in Richmond these days?
Hey, man, it's going great. We've had a little bit of rain. We've had some bumps in the road for the Flying Squirrels on the field in the last couple of the weeks since we spoke. But all in all, can't complain. It's another day in the RBA.
Well, later on, we're going to hear from Sean Anderson and Dylan Davis. And let's start with Sean Anderson from your perspective, watching him pitch. He's been one of the best pitchers in the Eastern League. What's making him successful?
Yeah, you know what? And I've talked with a lot of folks who feel as though he's going to be an all-star within the Eastern League. And really, Anderson, despite the fact if he doesn't have his best stuff or location, is still able to get through five or six innings. And in fact, in all 11 starts that he's had with the Flying Squirrels this year, he's gone at least five. And six seems to be the norm for Sean Anderson. And it's a four-pitch mix that he's really able to get ahead of hitters. And sometimes the only knock on him, I think, is that he'll leave the ball up a little bit early on in his outing. But because he's got a lot of movement, because he's got a lot of zip on that fastball, he's really able to get through even when he doesn't have that plus command. And then when he gets two strikes on a hitter, it's that slider, that out pitch, the pitch that made him one of the best closers at Florida in his collegiate years, has certainly translated to success here at AA.
Yeah, great pickup for the Giants, getting him in a trade last year for Eduardo Nunez. What about on the offensive side? We're going to talk to Dylan Davis later on. I know he's got some home runs, but from what I hear, he's not trying to hit home runs anymore after a tough year there last year.
Yeah, well, you're hearing correctly, Joe, of course, all the way across the country and what Davis has been able to do this season. Look, this is a guy that got to AA last year and really struggled. I mean, couldn't hit consistently, was chasing balls out of the zone, and I think this past offseason, Dylan has a really really solid structure of family and friends and those that have been around the game that have been able to help him get to where he is right now. He's been the four-hole hitter here for manager Willie Harris, and you're right. He's been taking pitches the other way. When guys have been getting on base at second, he's got two strikes on him, the pitch to the outside corner, he'll just whack it into right field. Now, of course, he can pull the ball with plenty of power. We've seen that for Dylan Davis. I believe he had 10 home runs last year in 99 games and something to the effect of 24, 25 extra base hits, and he's already approaching that number in just 60 games this season. But it's really been impressive to see him, you know, develop, and that's, of course, what the guys are trying to do at this level every single day, is to get better, to not chase pitches, to be able to hit in two strike counts, to be able to advance runners. And I think Dylan Davis has really started to make himself more of a complete hitter as opposed to just a power hitter.
Well, it looks like Luigi Rodriguez is quite a revelation. We've been talking about him on this show because he's a top hitter right now for the Flying Squirrels. It seems like it came out of nowhere. He's been sort of a journeyman. He was with the Indians organization. So what happened to this guy?
Yeah, you know what? Luigi was given an opportunity here in Richmond, and he's really taken advantage of it. You know, I think a lot of times when guys run their 6 or 7 year minor league contract and that course is up at the end of their time with a certain organization, they latch on to another organization, but they're not really considered that top prospect anymore. However, with Luigi, he's just 25 years of age, and he had a lot of success at this level last season. And I think there might be some comparatives there with what Dylan Davis that I just spoke about has been able to do. But Rodriguez has put a lot of contact together. He had an assault on 400 just about 50 games into the season, hitting upwards of 408, 409 as things have dipped down just a little bit for him. But he's been setting the table, you know, and I think Ronnie Jababy at the beginning of the season for the Giants ideally would have been that guy, that leadoff guy with the speed and the know-how and the ability to advance from first to third. But Jababy hit a little bump in the road at the start of the season, and so he's been lower in the order for manager Willie Harris, and Luigi Rodriguez was that guy to fill the void, and man, he has been impressive. I think one of the things they'd like to see a little bit more from Luigi is that power. I think he's sacrificed some of the power for consistency at the plate, but he can pick his spots. And, you know, they've been playing the shift on Rodriguez. Joe, I know you've seen this, of course, all around baseball, where left-handed hitters, regardless of who they are being shifted to the right. Four infielders stacked up and on the right side. But Rodriguez, time and time again, has been able to just serve the ball the other way, go with the pitch, and also lay down a few bunts that utilize his speed. Surprisingly, he's got 10 stolen bases already this season for the Flying Squirrel. So, yeah, maybe a name that Giants fans don't know a ton about, but certainly one that they can learn here quickly.
Yeah, that is amazing that there are shifts going on, overshifts in the minor leagues. Yeah. I mean, we're seeing it. The analytics are amazing that it could happen at that level as well as the major leagues.
Well, two things. You know, I've been doing this way too long, as you know. This is, I think, my 14th or 15th year in minor league baseball. Two things in your days in MILB, Joe. You never saw shifts, and you never saw guys swing away at 3-0 counts. And we're seeing that almost on a daily basis here, and I think that's just what the numbers and the analytics are saying. Those are pitches, those are situations you need to attack.
Here's another thing of today's baseball. Most starting pitchers are big guys now, and you've got a couple of guys in your rotation I wanted to ask about, Corey Taylor and Jordan Johnson. Both of those guys seem to be throwing the ball pretty well. They're big, maybe intimidating people on the mound.
Yeah, Taylor's a hoss, man, and unfortunately he was put on the disabled list this past week, but he doesn't feel it's anything serious, and he's been a guy that didn't miss a turn in the rotation all of last year in his first stint at AA, and you can say the same for Jordan Johnson, really, up until the end of the year where Johnson got injured running the bases trying to leg out a triple. So, yeah, both those guys have been stalwarts for the Flying Squirrels at the top of that rotation. I think Jordan Johnson is figuring things out a little bit more each and every outing. Johnson has been around the strike zone with more regularity this season. Taylor is another guy that if he can find the location on that two-seam fastball, he can generate quite a few ground outs for the Flying Squirrels. But yeah, they're big, they're sturdy, and they're a reason why the Squirrels are still above 500 here, which is something they haven't had really in 3-4 years here in Richmond.
Ryan Howard is another guy who just got put on the DL, I understand, and he was a really good hitter in the Cal League last year, one of the top hitters, really, and he's carried it into the Eastern League. Why is he doing so well?
Yeah, well, let me put a comp on Ryan Howard. I know baseball guys love comps, but he reminds me a lot of 20-year-old Christian Arroyo when he was here, and I know Howard is a college guy. He's a little bit further along in terms of years at 23, but not missing a beat, being able to hit at the top of the order, and striking the ball with consistency and with authority. And so when Howard makes contact, I mean, there's a reason why he was second in the league in doubles up until getting put on the disabled list actually today as we record this on Tuesday. They think he's going to be fine. He had a missile out to center field, and he was rounding first base and kind of came up a little bit lame. So he's on the disabled list with a hamstring, but shouldn't be more than 10 days or so, I'm told. But, yeah, a guy that really hasn't looked lost at this level, and it's hard to say that for a lot of guys, no matter who you are. You know, you could be Francisco Lindor coming through here, or Manny Machado, you know, just name a couple of the guys that have made their way through the Eastern League in the past half decade. They can look lost at times at this level, and guys like Howard, and to use Arroyo as a similar type player, really haven't.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it's not easy to get through that league. And the last thing I wanted to ask you about, some of the guys who are struggling, who were pretty good in San Jose, like Jonah Arenado and Aramis Garcia and Dylan Dobson, those were names that San Jose Giants fans are familiar with, and they have struggled in the Eastern League.
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise there is Aramis Garcia, and it's the batting average that you really look at, where it's about 200 now, 60 or so games into the season. And Garcia made his Double-A debut last year with the Squirrels, joining the team for the last month of the season. And man, he was really a guy they could lean on in the order to get on base and hit over 280 in his first stretch at Double-A. So he's trying to figure some things out. I think he's maybe chased some pitches that he normally wouldn't chase, and he's, I think, getting that level where the league made an adjustment to him, and now it's his turn to make an adjustment to them. I think Arenado, also was around the 200 mark, now up to about 215 in the batting average, but he was starting to get on the right track, and then unfortunately at the end of April, early May, was taken out on a play down the left field line. He was going high, and one of the other defenders went low, and he fell on his shoulder, his non-throwing shoulder, so he missed about 32 games with the Richmond Flying Squirrels and actually just rejoined the team. So good news for Arenado is he's back, but you sort of feel like you're starting from square one again, where you get to a new league, you struggle a little bit, you start to figure things out, and then you get taken out for a month, and so now he's sort of back to the early part of the season. So hopefully we'll see his bat continue to grow, because there's certainly quite a bit of power in that bat as well.
That's the voice of the Richmond Flying Squirrels, Jay Burnham. I want to thank him, Dylan Davis, and Sean Anderson, as we were able to catch up on all of the happenings there in the Double-A Eastern League. And by the way, if you want to check more on the Giants farm system, we update you every couple of weeks on Orange and Black Best of the Farm, a television show that you can find on BAOSN.TV, as that'll be updated this Thursday, a special interview that we did with the Giants farm director, David Bell. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.